any of the three panelists have comments on each other's comments. Larry, you're first.
No, let Kate be first. I was first last time.
Okay. One or two quick comments to Robbie. First off, one thing that I've noted, he mentions teaching students. Actually, a bit of a plug, Victoria Staudin out of Columbia is right now in the process of teaching a course to their stat grad students on how to make their make research reproducible. As a fun part of the course, they're checking papers from the literature. And as another fun part of the course, midway through the course, other students in the class will be asked to evaluate how reproducible their own the other students' reports are about what they've done. So this is going to be an interesting back and forth. She's got some really cool course notes. She's promised that she will summarize this in May, but the course notes that I have are shareable, so contact me, I'll toss those out there. One other thing is that in terms of software or making things easy to use or something like that, one thing that has been pointed out is that statisticians do not need to come up with all of it. There is, for example, an open source software community that is far larger than the community of statisticians. And, for example, there are tools that they have developed, such as Git for versioning software, which is free, for which there are books, which you can learn about. So there's a bunch of resources for using this that are available outside the community, and we just need to look a bit to find them. That's my main comment.
Thank you, Keith and Roger, for some good presentations. I appreciate the thoughts. My comment about Roger, and then a question for him, and a question for you, Keith. One of my comments for Roger is that at the end you mentioned quite glibly best practices for computational research, and it sounds like if there isn't a place for hosting that, we ought to talk about how do we get best practices out into the community so that we can have a learning community about that. Here's my question for you. You mentioned that the journal waits until the author requests reproducibility. Why did you do it that way instead of the journal prioritizing and selecting the articles that it was concerned about or thought it would deserve highlighting? Why did you do it that way as opposed to making it the editor's responsibility to say, oh, I want to see this one reproduced?
I think the bottom line is, at least initially for this policy, which was experimental, editors did not want to come up with something that would deter submission or deter anyone from submitting to the journal that would have submitted, that might submit elsewhere because of this extra policy. I think, I've spoken with many other journals, and they are, and some journals are actually run as a business, and they're very concerned with the idea that people might just turn somewhere else and submit their paper somewhere else.
Sort of a carrot instead of stick approach. And then the question for Keith has to do with code-checking. You make it sound simple, but code-checking is far from simple, and certain products that I'm aware of, in particular, if you want to check the code of an implantable cardioverter defibrillator, then you're going to read 5 million lines of code. It ain't going to happen. So things have gotten really complex. Now, there are some really good modern computational tools or static tools that can actually do some of the code checking, but line-by-line code checking is not very practical. How do you imagine this might actually happen? Roger and I are going to get our $3 million grant, and we're going to get you to check it. Yeah, we get it instead of you this time. And then, but suppose there is support. How do you manage to go about this? You make it sound straightforward. I think it's less than that.
To the extent that I made it sound straightforward, I hereby apologize. I have done code checking line by line in some instances, and I will gladly agree that this is not often simple. And particularly if somebody is using acronyms for something that was remarkably obvious to them but not obvious to you as to what XR, for example, represents. Okay, it's difficult. Part of this, however, is in terms of code checking, there's also the idea from the software community that you can write things in modules with specifications and use tests saying, this module is designed to do the following things. Here are, for example, when presented with inputs of this type, it should produce this output. So as a first thing, you can say, does that happen? So that's that. Actually, one of the things that I find somewhat incongruous as a statistician is that in many cases these are called regression tests, and I cross-link to something completely different. But actually, from the point of view of checking, and one thing that I was thinking that the FDA might do, and this is what I was thinking might not be too difficult, is to say, okay, you want to use this signature or this approach in a clinical trial. Well, all right, here is patient data. Here is the assay or the test that you're going to apply to that. Here are the results. Some of the things you've already published for this, that's your claim for sending it to us. Can you supply this to us in a form with the documentation that says, here is the data file, here's a README, I can plug it into the computer, here are what our published results are, so that we can simply say, plug it in, ideally run it, do the results we get at the end of the day match? So can we perform a regression test? And I'm hoping that that might not be so onerous. Checking millions of lines of code, okay, I don't care if you've got $3 million, you're not gonna, 10% of that is not gonna be enough to make me do it for you.
Thank all panelists, and I'd like to try and open this up to the audience. I feel a little like a game show host, but I spoke to people earlier.